Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and thank you for joining us on the latest Tribe Supper. As ever, it's Dom Shaw here, joined by Phil Tallentine and Anthony Vickers. We don't have a new manager to talk about yet, but we do have a signing to talk about.
Yeah.
I reckon if someone had said last week, will you have a signing or a manager first, they'd have probably said manager.
Yeah. I think you'd have to, wouldn't you? Because... you'd expect it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Young Grimsby striker Burrell joins for an undisclosed fee. Burrell made it clear that he'll obviously join the academy ranks. We were just saying there before we started, it'll be similar to the George Miller type signing from a few years ago. I guess on the back of Steve Gibson's talk about, you know, his vision for the academy and whatnot. It's just a sign of the focus they're putting into the academy, and obviously they've spotted some potential there that they want
to have. And to be fair, it's not a sudden development. We have had, over the last couple of years, we've had similar signings, Jordan McGee, for instance. I suppose it's a fairly low risk for Borough to bring someone in for a year to assess them, see if they're, you know, they've got what it takes to play at the higher levels, and if they haven't, it's fairly easy to move them on. You only need to get one right to save the club £5, £6, £10 million in signing fees.
Yeah, and for him, Phil, you wrote earlier this week how excited he was. What an opportunity.
Oh, yeah, I mean, from what I gather, you know, only 2 years ago he was leaving, you know, Coventry City, taking his chances with Notts County. He's been playing reserve team football. He's had a little sniff of the first team, which is great for him. But, you know, it'd be, surely, be well advised to realise that he's still got it all to do. But yeah, I mean, just moving into that academy, you know, the training ground, the setup, the, you know, the opportunity that presents itself. And I also think it's interesting that we're seeing Middlesbrough being a little bit more, I suppose, open to bringing in teenagers from other clubs. It didn't happen so much, you know, back in the sort of Steve McLaren, Brian Robson days. You had the occasional one like Danny Graham, who came from Chesterley Street. I think he was 17 when he joined the club and finished off his sort of training with the academy. We've always pretended to produce our own from the ages 7, 8, 9 upwards, haven't we? But there's, you know, I think Jed Spence came in from outside. There's been one or two others as well. And that just shows a little bit of open-mindedness, really, that, you know, prepared to keep an eye open. You know, and you mentioned George Miller. I mean, the only thing I hope is that, you know, it seems a little bit counterintuitive to sign a player like George Miller, give him 18 months, 2 years, and then let him go again. Now, obviously, you'd think, wouldn't you, that they'd seen something in him to sign him in the first place to make him worth the gamble. And they did the right thing for me in getting him back out on loan to, you know, to continue his development, because he was scoring goals down the lower leagues. It was at Bury, wasn't he? You do kind of think, well, if you're going to make that effort, you need to give them maybe a little bit more time. But, you know, managers change, coaches change, and players change as well.
To be fair, they did see him over the course of the best part of 18 months playing competitive football, and they've made their judgment on that basis.
So. No, absolutely.
On the subject of the under-23s, Paul Stevenson has left. That was a surprise announcement, a surprise departure since we last recorded a Tribe Supper. That was the sixth exit, I think, last week on the back of the cull of the first team staff.
If you're keeping count, yeah.
Yeah, no announcement yet as to who'll replace Stevenson. I would imagine that'll probably come after the manager is announced, which at this stage is still unclear. Slavisa Jokanović's favourite at the time of recording ahead of Jonathan Woodgate, and then come the names. We don't want to talk about this at length because A, it might change, B, we did it last week. But it seems that we're ruling more people out. John Terry, you know, we understand there's nothing there. Michael Reisiger, he's now with the IX's first team.
Are we ruling them out? Were they ever
well, they've been mentioned. They've been mentioned, haven't they? They've been linked and they've been heavily linked, mentioned. So we are ruling them out on that basis.
Yeah. We know what the situation is. I mean, Steve Gibson says he's going to take his time to interview people, but we understand people have made presentations and there's been some discussions with various candidates. He's abroad at the minute. There'd be no rush. They want to get the right appointment. And that's a good thing for me. It's interesting that the ones that we are aware of as realistic candidates, Woodgate and Jokanović, represent polar opposites in the way that the club are say that they want to go. And it's also interesting, you mentioned Paul Stevenson got the bullet. He was the one person that's left in this cull that wasn't part of Tony Pulis's backroom setup. And it does leave an interesting vacancy there. So you think, well, if a manager comes in from outside, Woody could move to the under-23s maybe. And that would leave a new manager the opportunity to completely bring in his own backroom staff. So I think that's interesting. You know, it raises question marks as to exactly which direction they're going in. It also perhaps it poses a pressing problem in that Borough now effectively have no backroom staff. Pre-season training starts in a month.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, Phil. Obviously, we don't know who is going to come in. But when they do, what are the priorities? The obvious one is bringing the backroom team in, but that's settled before whoever it is, is appointed. There's a number of players, first things first, who the likes of Rudy Gestede and Martin Braithwaite, the two that spring to mind.
Yeah, well, sorry, you're just going back there. So you say the backroom team should be settled when the new manager's appointed, but I mean, if it is Woody, who does he bring in? You'd imagine if Jovanovic comes in.
But you'd imagine if Woodgate, for example, has sat down with Steve Gibson, he would have discussed who was going to come in alongside him, what he foresees his coaching team being like. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the priorities, it's a big ask, isn't it, to come in? Let's say it's next week the appointment's made. As Vic says, the pre-season training's due to start in the best, really, 3 weeks' time by the time we get to next week. So there's the preparation in terms of, I know Tony Pulis said a few weeks ago that he'd organised everything in terms of, where they're going and what they're going to do, and we'd already assumed that the Alpine boot camp in Austria might go the distance when the new guy walks through the door. But you've got to imagine that something's already been organised, similar to last year, because that's what he also did at West Brom. He went to Austria and then he took the team places like Germany, just exactly as he did last season. So you would imagine something like that's in the diary ready, just all organised and sorted, just waiting for confirmation. I think the difficulty is, and I think this sometimes gets overlooked a little bit, is that you can have all the desire you want to bring in your own players, and I'm sure Borough will bring in players this summer. We know that, for example, they made great strides in trying to sign Geraldo Becker. But what do you do with the players that you inherit? It's easier said than done moving on players who were on tens of thousands of pounds a week, who haven't really caught the eye, particularly since they've been at Middlesbrough, and who may be very hard to move on. Do you incorporate them in the group? Do you think, right, well, I'll have a look at them myself, just because they haven't worked for manager A doesn't mean to say they won't work for me. I'd use the example, Martin Braithwaite. We all assume that he won't be here next season. He said some pretty controversial things specifically about Tony Pulis, didn't he? And I'm sure he hasn't exactly won hearts and minds behind the scenes at Rockcliffe either. But, if a new manager walks in the door and plays the kind of football Martin Braith wants to play, why wouldn't he necessarily stay and be part of that new setup? It might be the case that we've had a player who's done really well for 18 months and the new manager comes in and doesn't fancy him. We're assuming that he'll want to use player X and player Y.
Well, it happens. I mean, if you think, for example, Cyrus Christie, the best player in the Gary Monk,
and Ryan Shotton was completely out of it. Completely out of it till Tony Pulis walked through the door. I know he'd made that comeback match against Sheffield Wednesday, hadn't he? But he'd been kicking his heels in the reserve since his move from Birmingham. So it's the easiest thing in the world to sit here and just assume that things are going to happen the way we think they're going to happen. But, the managers come in, they have their own ideas. You call it, I guess it's a bit like the Chris Powell effect when Sven Goran Eriksson took over at England, and suddenly he made that left field suggestion, didn't he? A selection, should I say, and brought him in the team and liked the look of it. And I like that open mindedness. Actually, I hope the manager does come in with an open idea of, right, I've got a squad of players. There's a big wage bill here, so I know I'm not going to be able to keep all of them. But maybe I can get more out of the ones that are earning more money.
Which players then will welcome this change, we'll welcome some fresh eyes, and we'll go back and think, you know, this is relishing the chance to.
Well, the obvious answer is those that are in the team on day one. I mean, the thing is, when you manage
now, though, I'm talking now, the players now at this stage, you would think, for example, that Britta Sambalonga is one of them.
Yeah, anyone that thinks that their strong suit is attacking football, because the chairman doesn't make many statements, but the one he did on the night Tony Pulis left was that he wanted to turn to youth and he wanted to play more attacking football. So people who think that's their strong suit will probably welcome the idea. If you're one of the four centre-backs that have relied on physicality rather than mobility, you might think differently. When a manager comes in, there's a lot of issues to address. And I mean, some of them are technical in terms of what you do, what your staff is. But perhaps more important, the issues that need to be addressed are cultural. We've had 5 years of functional football. Borough have played a fairly ponderous, mono-paced possession game. And we're led to believe that Borough want to be a bit more adventurous, a bit more swashbuckling. And I think it's quite important for a new manager to come in and move the cultural furniture, change the cultural architecture of the club, so that there is a different ethos. And that's sometimes harder to do than just technical things. You know, you can coach people in particular positions and stuff, but changing the mentality sometimes and rewiring the club is a lot harder to do.
How does he do that then? How do you set about doing that?
Some managers would bring in two or three of their own players from past clubs that know exactly how they play, who can be an ambassador in the changing room and can enforce it. Sometimes you need to bring in completely new players because some people just can't adapt, and that's just the reality of it. It's a high risk strategy, changing things too much, as we know.
Yeah, I was going to say, does sometimes the manager have to adapt as well and think, you know, I can't make as many changes. I know Paul Hurst, for example, when he went in Ipswich last year, I remember reading a few of the things he was saying, where he was saying that the players couldn't adapt to my demands as quickly as I'd have liked. And I thought, well, first things first, should you really be saying that?
Mm.
And secondly, it does raise this prospect of a manager maybe having to go in 2 or 3 weeks in thinking, right, I wanted to do that, but now I'm not going to be able to. Maybe I'm going to have to introduce that over the course of the season. Well, Steve Bruce said the same at Sheffield Wednesday. He was talking about how he was surprised at how quickly the players at Sheffield Wednesday bought into what when he went in there, he probably didn't give it a thought of Sheffield Wednesday getting in the top six, when in actual fact, I know they finished, I think it was 6th place and 10 points back, but they flirted with it ever so briefly.
I think it does help if a manager comes in sort of ground zero in pre-season and with the ability to bring in his own players.
Well, the classic example,
it's a lot harder to do it to, you know, change horses in midstream.
I mean, the classic example is Bielsa at Leeds. He came in this time last year and took pretty much the same group of players who had been sort of dropped off badly at the end of last season before last, didn't they? They looked like they had a chance to finish in the playoffs, and then they dropped away badly, and most people accepted that they wouldn't be good enough, or certainly be outsiders for the top six. And he's gone in there and completely stamped his own philosophy on it. Now, obviously, he's coming at that with years and years of experience and a massive reputation of playing a certain way, and a very much, you know, fit in or get lost kind of attitude as well. And certain players in that system have flourished. I think Click was a player who done nothing and then blossomed under Bielsa, so it can be done. I think the other side of that coin is you get a situation where Gary Monk comes in again with a similar remit to what the new manager is going to have now, and he just couldn't see the wood for the trees, could he? He you know, as we've mentioned in these podcasts before, he changed the system a week before the start of the season, and then felt he was playing catch up from then onwards because he didn't seem to take the players with him. I think that's the point, you know, important point Nick's making there about coming in, hitting the ground running, and making sure that the players believe 100% in what you're doing, and almost giving their entire trust to the manager. And the moment the manager starts second guessing himself, players aren't daft, they can tell straight away when the manager's struggling to find the right philosophy. And that's clearly what happened with Gary Monk. He came in and had one idea of how he wanted to play, had a change of heart at the last minute, and from then on in, really, Borough never really looked convincing, and he struggled to convince everybody that he was the right man for the job. So it's a difficult task. Hurst's a great example of somebody who went into a club, and I know they weren't in the same circumstances as Borough, but there was a desire there to play a certain type of football, they lost some important players over the summer, didn't they? And they never really got going the following season. So I'm not suggesting for a second that Borough are going to go down next season. But the danger is you get somebody in who maybe is full of big ideas but can't implement them.
Did you see Mick McCarthy's interview?
He wasn't too generous, was he?
Absolute classic, Mick. It was the pause.
Yeah.
It was the pause that made it before that worked out well. Yeah. But on that manager thing, it's interesting to say that because I was reading an interview with Philip Billing, the Huddersfield player, where he's talking about Jan Seward's, the guy who took charge of Huddersfield, who must be the most anonymous Premier League manager in history.
I honestly think
if he walked into most high street stores, he wouldn't be recognised as a Premier League manager. But he was saying anyway.
This isn't in any way Claude Puel's one of the managers, was a manager.
Yeah, I remember that game at Southampton when he came into his press conference and he sat down and everyone on the front row picked up the chair and shuffled forward and I thought, what's the game here? And I soon realised when he started talking.
In a whisper.
Yeah, you know if you can't hear with my ears, then there's a problem. But Billing was saying about Seward that he's arrogant, he said. And he said within a week of coming in, the players had figured him out and realised that basically, or words to the effect of, he came in pretending as though he was a Premier League manager.
Mm.
And it is that, you know, managers will have to go in and portray this confidence.
Yeah.
It must be difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Because, that confidence won't always be there. Make sure that players don't see through you at times.
I mean, I think what's potentially good at Middlesbrough is, and this is only what we see from the outside, but it does seem that there's not too many players in the dressing room who will deliberately look to
it's a very solid dressing room.
It doesn't feel like there's a lot of characters in that dressing room who will deliberately try and test the manager out and, you know, try and catch him out, you know. I would think that would be a pretty good group of players in terms of an attitude to take on. We know there's problems within the structure of the squad and the balance of the squad, but I don't see that being a particularly demanding dressing room to get a hold of. But as you say, and, you know, as we know, footballers are very clever at working out. You know, it's like a classroom, isn't it? A classroom of 25 10-year-olds can sniff out when they've got a weak teacher, and within 5 minutes there'll be chaos. It's just it's instinctive within groups of people. They know when they've got somebody who's, I suppose the word's bluffing, isn't it? Someone who can talk the talk but can't walk the walk, that kind of thing.
And on the dressing room, I know there's plenty of fans who probably won't have, there's my pen going, who probably won't have a good word said about Tony Pulis at the minute. But you know, if you think about Gary Monk's final press conference when he was talking about how the hangover from the Premier League season was still lingering, when you come into a broken dressing room, how difficult it is to fix. One thing Tony Pulis did was fix that dressing room, because last season all he did at every given opportunity was talk up the character of the dressing room. There's absolutely no suggestions of any issues in there now.
No.
In his 18 months in charge, he made sure that any kind of hangover friction was gone.
Yeah, we've all interviewed the players and it's unprompted. They will say, this is a great set of lads, this is a strong group. Sometimes a lot of that is just lip service, but I mean, you do get the impression that it is a genuinely solid group, good, honest, hard-working lads. Maybe it's lacking a little bit of spite. Maybe it's lacking a real leadership of the cup. You know, it's hard to replace someone like Grant Ledbetter mentally and psychologically as part of the mix. And maybe that's something that the new manager will need to address. That yes, they are a good bunch, but maybe they need a bit more fire, a bit more edge, a bit more openness to buy into what he proposes and a new methodology. Sometimes you do need to shake it up a little bit. But yes, I think it's a sound, solid group of the championship players that wouldn't take that much to make it a lot more effective. But managing a team is not always about getting better players. You can bring in better players and make a team worse if they don't fit in. Managing a group of players is about delivering a team that is more than the sum of its parts. And a lot of that is psychological. And a lot of that is about mentality.
I mean, I think watching a fair bit of the playoff semi-finals and the run up to the playoffs and indeed the playoff final, it's noticeable how niggly the successful teams were. Aston Villa virtually tried and run matches if you watch how they go about it, the way they reacted to that Leeds incident when they didn't get the ball back, and to a man, they virtually turned on the referee and on the opposition. Now, you don't have to like that, but that tells me that's a team that really has a little bit of the, you know, the I don't know what the word is, they've got a bit of badness in them, but they've also got hunger, desire, they played fast pace.
Man City are the masters of it.
Yeah, I mean,
dark arts.
But Barcelona, everyone forgets that dark Barcelona, for all their beautiful ticky-tacky football, one of the most cynical teams that's ever played football in terms of fouling the opposition on the edge of their own box to slow them down and to force them to regroup. It's absolutely the dark arts. Look at Real Madrid, look at Ramos.
Derby is the absolute
master. Yeah, absolute master. Derby were a niggly team. They were in the face of the referee. You know,
Borough were brilliant at it under Karanka.
Borough had a bit about that. Yeah. They did a bit about them. They knew when to keep the ball out of play. They knew when to stay down.
They rotated fouls. So
that Norwich game, you think the 1-0 Norwich game, that was one of those where if you were a Norwich fan, you'd have went away absolutely seething and hating Karanka's Borough, wouldn't you?
There's a few results like that. And you don't have to like it, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of teams do it and a lot of teams succeed. And there's been a feeling about Borough for the last 2-3 years, as Vic alluded to earlier about the pace of the team, they are too slow and deliberate. I wouldn't say they were a nice team, I wouldn't say they were too nice, but you just wonder where the leaders are sometimes when you're looking on the pitch, because there are players who keep, you know, at times in the Karanka team, you had Ben Gibson, you had George Friend, you had Grant Ledbetter, you had, you know, two or three of the other players who you knew were refereeing the match almost on the pitch. They were getting into the teammates, they were getting into the opposition. That was a strong Borough team. You'd call it, for want of a better expression, a team of men. I think they've lost a bit of that. There's no real identity and direction to the team at the moment. Or there wasn't for me last season. Too often it was like they were reactive. They weren't stamping themselves on matches. They were waiting for the opposition to come at them, particularly at home. You know, even when they went away, the preferred strategy was soak it up and hit teams on the break. It was very much about stopping somebody doing something rather than being on the front foot and making it happen. And for me, as much as anything, some of the football that was played by the best teams in the Championship last season was a different game to what Middlesbrough were playing. And that's sad to say that because, you know, we all thought Borough had a chance.
I thought about watching the playoffs.
You know, I think Steve Crossman said, of the four teams in the playoffs, the teams you'd pay to see all of them.
Yeah.
You know, Derby, Villa, Leeds,
and West
Brom. They
were rewarded for ambition, weren't they?
Yeah, they were all decent teams to watch, and I think there's a lesson there to be learned.
I think the myth, it used to be this thing about the Championship being a grind, and you've got to have players who've been there and done it, and I don't think that's the case. I mean, you look at that Derby team, for example, full of young, kind of upcoming players who you'd look at and think, well, yeah, you wouldn't fancy those if it got rough and ready. But in actual fact,
I mean, some of the football that played up here in the first half was sublime, wasn't it? And I think that team did ultimately have a bit of a soft centre, and you know, the evidence of that was the fact that they really made hard work of even finishing sixth, and that should have been Borough's position all day long. So there were flaws in that Derby team, but he took that group of players and got them playing a brand of football that bet their fans enjoyed watching more often than not. And it was good enough to get them to the finals of the playoffs, which was probably their minimum requirement this season.
We talked about the priorities for whoever does come in. Martin Braithwaite's mentioned. Is there anyone else who you think it's one of those where he comes in and think, right, we need to get him off the books? I mean, Rudy Gusstedt's the obvious player who springs to mind.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Gusstedt practically left in January and then he dragged his feet and the deal fell through, and I don't think those people in the club weren't very happy about that because they'd put a lot of Spain work into the deal. Clearly, with the Borough not getting their buck from him on the pitch, and given all that we know about the finances and the financial landscape we're in, I think they'll probably have to take a hit on him to get him off the books. Braithwaite's an interesting one because I think Braithwaite will have teams that are interested. It's just jiggling it about so that the money adds up, really. I've been led to believe that the club won't particularly want to let him out on loan this season. I think
That makes sense.
The understanding is that if he's available for loan, then other teams will play that.
Yeah.
And you're not getting your money's worth because, you know, you might end up only getting 60% of his wages.
And there's a year left after that.
And after that, he's, you know, one year left, he's virtually worthless. So it might be a case of taking a hit on the actual transfer fee, but getting some money back and resolving the issue one way or another.
And in terms of players coming in, we've talked about Becker. The obvious question, I guess, the obvious issue that's raised at this stage of the summer when you see players being linked without a manager is who's signing them?
Well, in some respects, that doesn't really make any difference because whoever comes in as a manager is going to have 22 players that he hasn't signed. So does it make any difference if he's got 23?
He just maybe used up some of his potential wriggle room. That's probably the only other argument you can make, isn't it? That if you've got X number of pounds to spend, you've already spent half.
The other side of that coin, though, is if you have players that you know you want to buy because they fit in with the strategy of the club and they're good value for money, do you wait for a month and then lose them?
Well, that's a good point, and that comes back to when the strategy of the club, doesn't it? Do you get a manager that's going to fit that strategy? Clearly you have to, don't you, if that's the case? I mean, just on players coming in, Dom, I think what's really intriguing me as well, in addition to the potential players coming in, I think going back to our point before about the style of football, there needs to be some energy in that centre of midfield. There needs to be somebody who can grab, you know, and I'm not saying Burra can go out and sign a Grealish, it would cost a fortune, that kind of player, but that kind of attitude, that kind of energy, that kind of drive, most teams that were successful or most teams that are successful now have that kind of player. I'm intrigued about somebody like, you know, George Friend and Adam Clayton, because in the right circumstances, they can be big assets to a new manager. You know, particularly someone like George Friend, who embodies everything that's good about football, you know, in terms of attitude, commitment, desire, behaviour pattern, you know, how do you, you know, he's coming now towards the tail end of his career. Will he play every week? He's had fitness problems. Now, you couldn't go one or two ways with that. Could you think, right, well, George, you know, we'll move George on if that's possible. Or you think, hang on a minute, I need, you know, when you need the right type of characters around you when you're bending new players at the club, maybe he's someone to have that role that maybe his Grant had over the last 18 months, where he's not necessarily playing every week, but he's the club captain in terms of off-the-field leadership. You know, Adam Clayton, people like that, they've still got time left on the contracts. You know, what do you do with Adam Clayton? Is he going to play every week? Is he going to fit the new manager's style? You go through a list of virtually every player within the first team squad at the moment. There's not many people that you'd say would definitely 100% stick-ons in the next manager's team. You'd say, but Darren Randolph, if you say you're sure. You know, after that, you know, are there any more than three or four players who you'd say, well, there's absolutely no way that player can be left out of the first 11 next season. I'm not sure there's that many can make an unarguable case.
I'd say Dale Fry and Lewis Wing.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I don't think there's anyone that you would say, you know, there's no one that, it's not a hill you're
going to die. There's no sacred cows there, is it? There's no one you could say.
I think on George, there's an argument that you could possibly see him as one of the centre-back groups, but he needs replacing at left-back.
You need two full-backs.
Yeah, exactly. And he was exposed at times. You know, it's strange because he was actually one of the most potent attacking outlets, you know, him charging up the left every week, but repeatedly, you know, you lose the ball in the opposition defensive third and there's a big space down the flank, and that might be something that could be addressed tactically, but you'd think that in the modern game fullbacks are absolutely essential, fast, technically gifted fullbacks. That's what Borough need on both sides, in which case you can move George and Ryan Shotton into the centre-back group, and then suddenly that looks like quite a solid unit with Dale Fry and Danny Ayala. Maybe one of Danny Ayala and Aidan Flint would be sacrificed, but that's still a half-decent group for the Championship.
I think going back to mobility is key for me. I think, you know, he had to mix and mend, didn't he, last season, Tony Pulis? He had to put square pegs in round holes, and whether he was quite forced to do as much changing as he ended up doing, there's certainly an argument to say that as we sit here right now, Burnley need two full-backs, two wide attacking players and a midfield creative player. And that's a ridiculously big wish list, really, to say at the end of May 2019 that you want to go out and buy, you know, basically four players for the wide positions and one for the middle. But
I mean, you would think any new manager who comes in is going to look at the squad and think, I don't need that many central midfielders.
Well, I'm just going to come on that point about you've got two players in George Savile and Paddy McNair who you just don't know what they're going to do next season, where they're going to fit in, what their roles are going
to
be.
I'd like to see McNair play midfield purely because of the mystery factor.
I'd like to see a player that costs £5 million playing in his best position for a run of games to see whether we can do it or not. We're here 11, 12 months after he arrived at the club, and we still don't know what his position is or where he's going to play.
I mean, interestingly, you're talking about the defensive options there and a bit of maybe of mobility at the back as well. I think McNair, a couple of nervy moments, but I thought he looked very assured playing there.
Yeah.
I thought, in fact, he looked the best of the three centre-halves that finished the season in that kind of makeshift defence. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you've got to think the midfield. The thing is, when you come in and you look at the midfield, a manager's going to look and think, well, I don't need that many central midfielders. But there's no obvious scapegoat.
No.
You know, Johnny Howson, any manager's going to like because of all that he offers you and his energy. Yeah.
Lewis Wing's had a good season.
Lewis Wing, you would think, a stick on. George Savile, you're going to look at and probably think, well, look at his record in the Championship, and there must be more than what we saw last season.
Yeah.
Same with Paddy McNair. Adam Clayton's been there and done it, and you think, well, you know, he could be a bit of a dressing room lieutenant.
There's five players for two positions, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think it'll come down to, do they get bids for any of them? And I think anyone of that group that we say is not essential or not nailed on or not part of the future, any offers that come in, I think they'll seriously think about taking them.
They're going to get the money back on McNair and Savile at the moment.
Well, maybe that's something that sometimes you have to do to create the wriggle room and to change the shape of the squad. You can't just say, well, we paid X and we can't sell him, otherwise you end up stockpiling players that are on the bench.
No, I totally agree with that, but the problem you've got is that you probably, after what has been in different seasons for both of them, being brutal, and I'm sure they'd say exactly the same thing if they were sat here now themselves, that they haven't had the best of seasons. I think you could probably take a hit on the transfer fees, but it's getting somebody to pick up their wages, isn't it? They're only a year.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If they get an offer, that's what I'm saying.
They're both one year in. That's why they
will take it, because they won't have the luxury of saying, well, you know what, we'll just see if anything else happens. It will be a case of, right, yeah, we can do this.
I mean, I think what's interesting is there's a lot of talk, and you know, I absolutely agree with it. The Borough need an attacking midfielder, they need a midfielder who's got the vision and the ability to pick a pass. You might have them there.
Mm.
When they're not playing the way that Tony Pulis wants to play, that is what George Savile has been all his career. It's what Paddy McNair was at Sunderland, a goal scoring midfielder who was kind of this box to box runner who covered lots of grounds and it could play as a number 10. Well, David Moyes said
we've seen that time and time again. We had three summer transfer windows where Borough didn't fill the gaps they needed to fill, but they brought in a lot of players, or relatively speaking, a lot of players. And that to me, they can't keep repeating that pattern. You know, we can't go through another window where the wide players aren't addressed. You know, whoever the manager is next season, Borough need more down the flanks than they're currently
getting.
Which is why they've gone out and tried to bring in Becker, even though the manager's not there.
Absolutely.
If they wait a month, they might not have that. Well,
you could make a case that they need three or four wingers. They haven't got any, really, have they? Tav?
Make
a case that, if you've got a manager coming in who's going to play with wide men, then you need more than two.
Well, you need just players who can play a wide role. It doesn't have to be orthodox wingers, and then they're kind of going out of fashion too. But they need players who can play wide, intelligent, wide players, and Borough haven't really got anybody on either side at the moment. As you mentioned, Tav, that's presumably Tav's role in the long run, but he's very young and very inexperienced. They might see that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about bringing players in from the academy, and maybe if Jed Spence has a good pre-season, he could come into one of the positions, and that might be what they have to do, because, as I said before, to buy two full-backs and two wide players in a central midfielder is asking a lot. Even if you've got the money to spend, it's finding them and getting them out of clubs, because the other thing we've got to consider is that, whether we like it or not, Borough probably won't be able to pay the money they used to pay, and, frankly, they're probably not as attractive as they used to be in terms of a buying club, because, as we've discussed in this forum many times, Borough been in the Premier League once in 10 seasons, or 10 years, whatever it is. So they haven't got the field to themselves, which has maybe been the case in the past. We've got six clubs with parachute payments.
That's assuming that they're competing with those six clubs in the way that they always have done in the
past. Yeah.
If they're competing lower down the level, then they are, not only are they very attractive, a big step up, but they also still have the muscle.
Mm.
We know that they can't compete with the bottom six of the Premier League and the top six of the Championship, which is what they've always done.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the massive inflation in wages and fees has really taken hold, and that's, you know, Borough can't even think of bridging that
gap. I just wonder if they feel as though they've had a little bit of the fingers burnt with the Marvin Johnson situation, where they did go down the divisions. They brought a player in who was it 3 million or something like that, but significant wages. And, you know, that didn't work for whatever reason. That hasn't worked.
There are plenty of examples in the Championship of it working.
Oh, Costa is, yeah. But it's not something Borough have done very well very often, is it? You know, making that kind of smart low league signing who's come in and been good enough to kick on at the higher level. And we, you know, it's asking a lot of the fans to be very patient and wait for 6 months for players to bed in. The modern fan isn't, you know, the modern journalist isn't that patient either, for that matter. You know, it needs somebody who can come in and adapt pretty quickly, doesn't it? But I take your point that you've already got five midfielders here. Yeah. I know, battling over one or two positions. So it is going to be a head scratcher for whoever comes in.
Just finally, before we wrap up top, we talked about Braithwaite and Gusted. That leaves Son Belonga and Fletcher. You would think whoever comes in is certainly going to want to try and get the best out of Britta Son Belonga.
There were flashes there at the back end of last season. They looked lively together. A lot of people have told me that Fletcher will never be a striker, but, you know, I think he showed real signs of progress down that final straight. Britt, whatever you think of him, his stats at this level are almost unbelievable. Just about one in two in the Championship over the last 4 years. And it's hard to believe that a manager would dismiss that. It is understandable that there may be financial pressures, and again, if they get an offer for him, they may have no choice but to take it, as he will be a big earner. If they can get £10 million or whatever with add-ons and be able to use his wage, they may be very, very tempted by that. But I think most managers would come in, look at his stats and think, well, this is a bloke who scores goals at this level.
If I was sat here now as a prospective Middlesbrough manager, I'd be thinking, give me Braithwaite and Son Belonga for the start of next season. I'll have them two up front.
I'm just looking from the outside. Even having done your research and looking at the baggage.
I'm just being devil's advocate here now, because but you look at him, you know, if he knew what he was stepping into when he came to Middlesbrough, he knew he was stepping down to the Championship. You might just think, look, I'll put my arm around him, I'll build my team around him. He scores goals, he creates goals, he needs a bit of love, he needs a bit of pandering to.
Do you think
I see that, but on the other hand,
wouldn't you have all day long you'd pick Braithwaite ahead?
As a footballer, absolutely.
But I'm just putting myself in the shoes of somebody looking from the outside.
I think if you do look from the outside, you obviously do your research and you look and you think, here's a character, you look at his background, and I think you can't hang your hat on him.
Well, we were talking earlier on about the importance of the dressing room and getting people to buy in, and the manager needs to have faith in it, that there's a unity there, and you have to wonder whether Braithwaite can.
Well, you just also said, though, we want some spiky characters.
I'm
just being devil's advocate.
Spiky is not the same as selfish, though, is it?
Well, I don't know. I think footballers are selfish. I think good footballers can be selfish.
So if you were a manager,
get a bigger, more selfish footballer in the world than Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not comparing Braithwaite to Ronaldo,
but
you know, it's all about him. It was always about David Beckham. It was always about the superstars in the team.
I think the difference with them is they're backing up on the pitch.
Yeah,
and Braithwaite didn't do that when he didn't get the moves that he wanted in the summer.
No, I'm not here to defend Martin Braithwaite. I'm saying that if you want to be, if you know, you can have your Fletchers all day long, but who's going to get you out of the division? And it might be Fletcher, it might be Son Belonga, it might be, you know, all I'm saying is there are decisions there for an incoming manager to make, and he might think, right, look, I'm coming here to get results. If it's Jukanovic, for example, he isn't here for a 4-year project. Is he going to get Borough up in 12 months, possibly 24? So he's looking, who can get me out of this division? Who can score goals? Britta Son Belonga, like Vic says, gets one every other game. You can't discount that. I don't know who else is going to come in and score more goals. You can criticise his all-round play all you want, but he scores goals. Braithwaite's talented. He has flaws. That's why he's playing in the Championship.
He's not playing in the Championship.
That's why he's playing for a Championship club. You've got, you know, you can... I'm just being here. That's an obvious thing. You're looking for talented players, and we all said we think the club probably lacks a bit of creativity, a little bit of spark, a little bit of movement.
I think the most important thing in any team is getting the unity and the direction, and I don't think you can trust Braithwaite. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's not...
I think if things go against him, he'll spit his dummy.
Well, that's all I'm saying is when Borough were flying in last August, he was the catalyst, or one of the catalysts, him and Downing. So
I think he had a vested interest.
Maybe he did. Yeah, I'm not here to suggest that Braithwaite is the answer next season, but I think
I'm looking forward to your column. Why Borussia should build their team around?
I'm just thinking it. But managers have to be practical. Managers have to be short term. Unfortunately, and unless we're going to go down the route of bringing
in. But doesn't that fly in the face of everything we've talked about the last couple of weeks about that's why Borough are where they are, and how they're now having to look at the bigger picture, and how they're now having
to... Totally. But if you've got a manager coming in with a small budget who knows that his job depends on...
If he's on a small budget, you've got to get rid of someone on Braithwaite.
Yeah, but they might be able to get him out, that's what I'm saying. So all I'm saying, I'm not saying he's the answer, but what I'm saying is, if I was a prospective manager, I'd be considering it. Because you have to consider it. You have to consider all the options.
It's taking a turn that I wasn't expecting.
No, you're not. Unity is strength. Yeah. I think if you're a manager, you have to weed out the troublemakers on day one.
Well, he might be a troublemaker under a different manager. That's all I'm saying. He wasn't a troublemaker at Leganés, from all we understand. I'm not aware that he was a troublemaker when he was in France. He didn't like playing for Tony Pulis.
Are you his agent?
Well, actually, now you come to mention it.
We don't know about.
Yeah. Oh, my Danish is improving, let's put it that way. I like the part, but no.
You'll be speaking to that. What's that Danish newspaper that you always speak to?
Dagblad.
You know for a fact when Braithwaite's on international duty that we're going to get something out of
it. I tell you what, stranger things have happened. Managers have gone into clubs and players who have been out in the cold for months, sometimes years, found a manager who just puts the arm around them. I'm not saying
there's a difference between being out in the cold and being stood on a burning bridge.
I think you're exaggerating the situation.
Here we go. Before we finish it, and I genuinely didn't think you'd be going on this.
Stuart Downing was training with the reserves when Gary Holt was here.
There's a huge difference, though.
But he was out in the cold.
But that was through no fault of Downing.
No, I know that. But I'm just saying that it happens. It happens that players come and go within clubs.
Here we go then, before we finish, do you think Braithwaite will be in the Borough team on the first day of next season?
I don't think it's unthinkable, but no, probably not.
I don't, I'm not even convinced he'll return to pre-season training.
He'll have to, won't he? He's got a contract.
I enjoyed that, I'm happy to just sit here and watch it, keep it going.
It's a recording, by the way.
I hope so, they've been going for 40 odd minutes, so we better wrap it up there.
Thanks for that, next week.
Yeah, thanks for that Martin Braithwaite special. Next week, Phil on Christian Ziga. Thanks for listening.